Ginger Feldman from High and Mighty Therapeutic Riding and Driving Center, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Green, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable. All the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bob Wills Architecture of Rhinecliff, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Amanda Fries reports in the Times Union that 70% of New York State healthcare workers have received at least one COVID-19 vaccine shot so far, up from 63% last week. Governor Andrew Cuomo continues to blame federal officials for a less-than-expected supply of vaccines. Cuomo said, and I quote, "The issue with the vaccination plan is the supply. We are ready for distribution of the vaccine in a much larger quantity. We have 3,000 distribution sites, 3,000 providers already signed up. We can get the needle in the arm. We just need the supply itself," end quote. While New York residents wait for the vaccine, many of them are catching coronavirus and some of them are dying. Greene County announced 50 more new COVID-19 cases January 25th and two more deaths. There were 46 new positive tests reported January 25th in Columbia County and one more death. Ulster County announced 70 new cases and Dutchess County reported another 190 cases and another death. There were 54 cases of COVID-19 reported by the Rensselaer County Health Department on January 25th, and one more death. In Albany County, there were 151 new cases announced January 25th, and one more death. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Capital Region reported Monday, January 25th, the lowest hospital bed availability in New York. The region includes Columbia and Greene counties. Reportedly, 24% of hospital beds were available over a 7-day average compared to the state's 7-day average of 32%. 18% of intensive care unit beds were available in the region, while 26% of ICU beds are reportedly available statewide. Neither the Capital Region or Columbia and Greene counties have been designated a microcluster for the coronavirus at this time. Columbia Memorial Health spokesperson Bill Van Slyke said, and I quote, "We continue to meet the current demand and are confident we will meet future demand. We are working with all the healthcare facilities in our region as we continue to balance the load," end quote. Van Slyke declined to disclose the hospital's capacity numbers. He said, and I quote, "We have seen in the last several days a reduction of about 10 to 20% of COVID cases," end quote. Columbia Memorial Health has stopped performing elective procedures and visitation is suspended except for patients who are in labor, pediatric patients, and patients who are terminally ill. On Thursday, January 21st, Albany Medical Center CEO Dennis McKenna reported 141 COVID-19 patients, 27 in ICU and 7 on ventilators. According to the statement, and I quote, All regional hospitals, including Albany Med, have begun to curtail non-essential elective procedures and redeploy staff to the bedside to care for patients, end quote. St. Peter's has also canceled elective procedures and taken steps to create additional capacity. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Paul Kirby is reporting for the Daily Freeman. Chris Teague is one of a group of Assembly Republicans to propose a 15-bill package intended to help farmers and people suffering food insecurity. Teague said the Food Insecurity, Farm Resiliency, and Rural Poverty Initiative would connect farmers with an excess of product to food banks and also provide farmers with grants and I quote, regulatory relief to help them expand and sustain their operations, end quote. The initiative's largest proposal, the Permanent Agricultural Purchasing Assistance Program, would allocate a total of $10 million every year to the state's 10 regional food banks to allow them to buy meat, dairy, and produce from New York farmers. Teague said an additional appropriation of $20 million would be created within the state's aid to localities budget to allow the program to expand in the case of statewide emergencies. The legislative package also would create a commercial meat and dairy processing incentive program to support efforts by the state to buy land and build processing facilities to be used by private meat and dairy processors. The Food Insecurity Initiative also would help new farmers start up operations by restoring the New Farmers Grant Program, as well as help establish farms with grants of up to $50,000 for those that have been in business for over 10 years. Teague said, and I quote, "This comprehensive package of legislation is the product of farmers, agricultural entrepreneurs, and members of nonprofit and community organizations coming together to connect the dots between food banks and our agricultural industry to assist farmers." And you can read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. State Senator Alessandra Biaggi said Monday, January 25th, the U.S. Census 2020 headcount should be extended by Congress to ensure a full survey of the public. The call for the extension comes following concerns raised last year over an undercount of people of color, immigrant communities, and low-income neighborhoods. The process was made all the more complicated by the pandemic. Federal aid is at stake, all the more important as New York and the U.S. look to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. Biaggi said, and I quote, "The pandemic, in addition to former President Trump's callous campaign to jeopardize the census, has compromised the processing of the census data, threatening the quality and accuracy of the count," end quote. She went on to say, and I quote, "This is a major concern for all New Yorkers, but especially in the Bronx, where our communities have been historically undercounted and need all the federal resources we can get to recover from the devastation wrought by COVID-19, end quote. New York could lose up to 2 seats in the House of Representatives, given the state's lagging population growth compared to the rest of the country. Biaggi also called for President Joe Biden to appoint a permanent census director in addition to extending the count. And you can read the full story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grand. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Frozen wasteland of upstate New York.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, January 26th. The snow is coming. We got a solidly frozen morning out there. 16 degrees in Oak Hill to 23 at Annandale on Hudson. Typical heavy snow conditions today. A high of 29, calm winds, and cloudy skies. The snow starts around 11 a.m. in Greene County and at about 12 p.m. in Columbia. Minor impacts on daily life are expected.
Tuesday afternoon show. As usual, we have a great lineup of artists and information. As you know, we feature musical artists and business, two of my favorite topics. This is Randall Martin, your host, and I'm here with my getting to be my regular host, bass player, bass player premier, Anthony Gethers from down the Poughkeepsie way, Newburgh, Nyack, way. We're going to kick it. We're kicking it with some music. And we've got some great local, emerging, soon to be national musicians here. We have Vermilo, who's going to speak to us. If anybody's gone to Club Helsinki or previously closed or now closed bar or many other places in the town of Hudson around there, you will recognize the name. And that's what we've got going on. We've got great guests, and then after this, in the 5 o'clock hour, we've got some interview that I did with Jason Benitez from the Capital Region Chamber. So that will help you learn about business and how you can get your business to register and get your business out there, especially if you're a minority business. But let's get to our local business at hand. Anthony, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, dude. How's it going on your end?
Things are going well. It's snowing. It's a new year. We've got new prospects going on. We got a new president. We got a new vice president. Things are looking and feeling good, feeling upbeat, feeling like we can get some things done. COVID is, while still a enormous problem, it is getting better. The numbers are going down, and so it's optimistic. But
can I chime in on the COVID thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
People don't realize this is really the time to either sink or swim. And I find that for a lot of musicians, especially young up-and-coming talent, because you're at home and you're now focused on doing stuff, you can literally take the time to develop your craft and also learn how to market it. Because the big problem that a lot of people have is not just creating the music, but how do you get it out there and then how do you monetize it? And COVID has put people in a position where you are forced to kind of hunker down and literally get used to it.
You're absolutely right. And, coincidentally, we've got a young man on with us today who has been doing just that. He's been in his lab, and he's been doing all sorts of creation during this time, reinvention. He's recording, doing a podcast, doing videos. He's got his own talk show on Facebook, making really the most of this time, which is, it's extraordinary. And from your everyday retail business to especially aspiring musical talent, we've got to find ways, we've had to find ways to really reinvent what we're doing and how we're doing it. And I'm going to introduce him here, and then we're going to chat also about some new regional up and coming artists. But as I mentioned, I have here Vermilo. Say hello.
Hi, can you hear me well? Can you see me?
I can't see you. This is radio, but we can hear you.
Oh, right. We're doing it, for those who are listening, it is a Zoom, so we see each other.
Yes.
But unfortunately, you can only hear our masculine, sexy voices right
now. Absolutely.
My voice is not sexy.
I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I genuinely appreciate it. I am Vermilo. If you are familiar with my work, I kind of debuted myself in the Hudson scene at Club Helsinki, which has been my creative performance home for about maybe, I started doing an open mic 2017. We took a little disco break and then really got back into it and started to meet lovely, lovely people and who took me in. Shout out to Bob and Stig. Thank you so much for letting me be in your little humble abode for me to express my creativity and my artistry and my music in the Hudson scene. So I'm very grateful for that. So yeah, I am 23, a young, black, openly gay performance artist. I always say that if Gaga and Prince had a baby, it would be me. And
this is right.
All I know, exactly. You know, definitely, yeah, you know.
It's the Lady Gaga and Prince.
Yes. If they had a baby, it would be moi. But yeah, I'm just a kid still figuring it out. But I'm so blessed and grateful to know my true, authentic purpose, and that is to break boundaries and stigmas and just bring people together through my artistry and through many other different avenues. I mean, during this time of quarantine, what really got into like my bones was that I knew that I have a mission to make sure everybody is okay, and for me to give some advice and perspective to people my age and to people younger, or hell, even to people older. I love the process of exchanging generations. I think it's a beautiful thing. I think that we all, we don't stop learning until we're 6 feet under or in an urn, whatever your preference is. And, but what I took away from quarantine and the whole pandemic is that, you know, we all are going through something that is really, really hectic and crazy, but we're all experiencing it together. And I think that's what the world needed, was for us to come together. And sometimes what I was saying on my show, which is called Tea with V, is a mixture between Wendy Williams and Oprah. If they had a baby, that would be the show. And I talk about, you know, advice and things that are going on in the media, you know, life stories that I've had experience, even though I'm still 23, I'm in my infancy. I know I haven't gone through that much, but all I remember was seeing that the world was going crazy, and I was just like, okay, let me just put on a wig, get on a nice outfit, press record, and start answering questions and just be vulnerable and open. And I had a lot of good feedback on that, so I kind of stuck with it, and I was just like, okay, well, people really, you know, authentically want to hear what I have to say. So let me make this my mission for the time being. You know, you're not performing, you're not, you know, you can write songs, you can make music videos in the privacy of your home for so long, but, you know, now I'm in a space where I'm confident enough to know what do I have to say to not only inspire people, but to really show that they're not alone in any capacity when it comes to this type of state of the world, that we're living in, if that makes sense.
Well, and I gotta say, when I seen you first at Club Helsinki, you just burst on the stage and just took over the room, and it was a sight to behold.
Literally.
And you know, us veterans are kind of sitting there, and hold on, I'm adjusting my volume. Hold on. Okay. us veterans, you know, used to the open mic experience, like, we hadn't seen anything like this. See, he just came on as a newcomer and performed, you know, like it was, you know, Madison Square Garden, and just absolutely floored, you know, the audience. You know, it was just, and has done so every show or open mic since. He just comes on, he owns the room, he puts on this full show, he's got costume changes in the act.
Yes.
While he's going.
Listen, I study from the greats, you know, between Michael Jackson, Gaga, Prince, Bowie, all the greats.
Yeah.
I'm still, like I said, I'm still an artist in my infancy, and I'd be a damn fool to not give credit where credit is due by all the greats and all the people that have paved the way for someone like me. And what I know is that I was born and destined to not only be a performer, but to also inspire and change lives as authentically and as humbly as I humanly possibly can. I'm so grateful that I'm here right now, that you allowed me to be on your platform for me to spread the love and the joy and for you to really, I remember so vividly after one of the shows, you just literally was like, kid, sit down. Do you realize the stardom that you have? That was on, where are you from? How are you here? What are you doing here type of thing? And, you know, I really love and respect and appreciate that because, you know, I'm always in my head trying to outdo myself and what could be better. But it's those people like you who did just sit me down and be like, kid, you're doing good. Like, be you as authentically as you can. So I genuinely do appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, you bring it. You bring it. You know, we sit there and sometimes you kind of get jaded and, you know, I might go off into, you know, to work on some music for a show or something coming up. And, you know, sometimes you can get sort of complacent, but you are never complacent. You are, you know, you're on fire every time you're, you know, every time you're in the room. And the whole audience just loves it. And sometimes, you know, it's funny because you can see, like, some of the audience are not really expecting it.
Yeah.
And you win them over. It's like, you know, they're looking around and like, well, what's going on here? This is a lot.
Yeah, and it's something that I love to do. I you know, my I would say like my awakening moment in my artistry was I was so fortunate enough to win a competition, which is a long story short. I was fortunate enough to win a competition to go see Lady Gaga at the Super Bowl halftime show. And when I finally got to saw one of my idols in real life doing a monumental moment, like a monumental performance of her lifetime, and to see her like come down from the like from the ceiling and doing all these songs that I never got to see her perform live ever. That was like my first 12-minute Lady Gaga concert ever. And when I saw that, that just added fuel to my fire to be like, okay, you better play these open mics like it's the damn Super Bowl. You better play these small club events like it's Madison Square Garden. So that was definitely a spirit, an artist spiritual awakening, and that just added fuel. It just truly added fuel, and every performance is always different, but every performance still is tethered into the one message, and that is being confident, being brave, knowing who you are and what is it that you authentically have to say. And, you know, some of the messages were really chaotic and messy, and some of the performances are really succinct and clean. And, you know, the viewers are also taken back because it's just like, whoa, like, what is this outfit? What are these performances? Why is he over here? Why? Because I'm the type of person who likes to be engaged with people, which is why I'm never on the damn stage. And shout out to Alex. Alex was he was the sound guy at open mic. I call him Aunt Alex. He's like my long time open mic crush. But he would always have to find me, you know, because I wouldn't be on the stage. I would literally be off the stage, connecting with people, dancing on tables, you know, dancing on this, and just really having an honest, real connection, because I don't want them to feel disconnected to me while I'm on stage. Now, granted, there are certain, you know, circumstances.
Well, let me set the scene here. And again, I'm trying to adjust my mic. You are a little low. Looking at my instrumentation here, if you guys can speak up louder, that would be great. Both of you guys are a little bit low on okay. your. So speak louder. Speak loud.
I'm turning my volume up.
Yeah, turn your volume up. Let me.
My volume.
Is it all? Is your volume all the way up for Milo? Because you're still low.
Let me see. Okay, hold on. Let me go to the settings. I should be up.
And while we're, you know, you can almost give like a master class because everything that you say is true and extraordinary because, you know, we go and that's better, but even louder. So, you know,
right now,
that's great. Like, okay. Sorry for you viewers at home.
Do you mind if I chime in for a second?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Without even knowing your music, like you mentioned literally, because like what I find today in this generation, I'm from an old school era of, I believe in performance and playing at the same time.
You do.
And I also find that that's not a common thing. And for me to hear you talk, it's refreshing. So you mentioned Prince, Lady Gaga, Michael Jackson. How about, now as far as performance, those are your key influences. And then you mentioned earlier that you saw Lady Gaga's show. So obviously, she's your big influence. Now,
yeah, she's definitely the one who kind of paved the way. I mean, grantedly, back in the day, I was obsessed with the Disney show Hannah Montana, you know, wanting
Miley
to be a performer.
Cyrus.
And then when I, right, Miley Cyrus. So when my friend played Lady Gaga music, I was just like, I am sold. And I can, you know, match the imagery to the performance. So yeah.
Now what I wanted to ask was, do you combine that with your songwriting? Is your performance and your songwriting kind of influencing each other? Or do you literally say, I write a certain way and then you're bringing that to the stage as well?
I think, well, for me, it always starts, because we're probably going to play one of my songs soon, but
okay.
How it starts out for me as a creative person, and side note, like, I am a person of who struggled with a lot of reading and writing, you know, proud dyslexic person. I call myself a dyslexian for all my viewers. But I remember growing up, I had a struggle reading and writing, but, you know, one of my father, he's definitely a musician in his own right and a creative empath. And I remember, you know, growing up and seeing him just freestyle on the mic. And
so your dad was a rapper?
My dad was a rapper.
Okay.
And
not
like a professional, but like,
okay.
Yeah, like he, incredible, immaculate writer. But he was also able to freestyle too, which was very, very inspiring. Because since I struggled writing songs, I knew that, okay, if I just learn how to freestyle and just feel the music, that I'll kind of connect the two in a weird way.
Got it.
Writing. So how it starts is that when I'm working on whatever God, I always say metaphorically, if God calls, pick up the damn phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get an idea. So I'll start off with the imagery. Like 9 times out of 10, all of my music and all of my work has always started with an album cover because I'm a visual
artist.
Okay.
Got it.
So I'll work on the album cover, then I'll put it on the wall, and then I'll just, the words, the melodies, and stuff like that will come to me. What genre do I want? How do I want it to go about?
Okay.
And then I'll start the whole recording and writing songs process of what it is that I'm feeling through this image.
Okay.
And then it starts to grow and change into the performances. You know, it just builds up the era.
Okay. Now, do you play an instrument?
I do not play an instrument.
Okay.
I do. I'm more
of
like a
Michael Jackson style. A lot of people don't know this. Michael Jackson doesn't play an instrument. Michael Jackson
does
not
play.
He doesn't know musical notes. He doesn't know music in any way, shape, or form. He just knows what he hears in his head. And
yep.
He literally had a four track when he was alive. He had a 4-track Tascam recorder. He would literally hear a melody, like when he'd hear like Billie Jean, he would just go boom, 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 boom. And he would sing it over the recording. Without lyrics, he'd go, na 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 Quincy would then take it, call his group of people, and say, all right, Michael wants to do this, and literally build the whole thing around his recordings.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, when you hear you, it's interesting because you, when he performs, you know, he won't be on stage, and then the room will go dark, and then there'll be a pre-recording, like this disembodied voice will come on from somewhere, and you kind of look around, and not just like for like, you know, like 5 seconds. This is on for like maybe 30 seconds. And so the audience is kind of looking around, kind of wondering what's going on. And then, you know, the lights will spiral. And then somewhere from the back of the room with the wireless mic, Vermaelen will come strutting out in huge heels. Huge heels, you know. And then deliver the show. And it's... You know, it's amazing because the energy is so high. And I remember, like, we've had to play after him. And it's hard because it's like, you know, I mean, we're playing good stuff, you know. Good musicians.
Playing amazing stuff, yes.
But he has lit up the room. And, you know, we're trying to figure out, okay, well, you know, now we've got to bring the...
What do we do now?
Exactly, the energy down to sort of...
this guy just tore the stage up. You did with you're probably too young to remember this, but Jimi Hendrix had an issue at the Monterey Festival. Jimi Hendrix and the Who, and the Who invited him to the Monterey Festival, and he said, "I'm going to close the show." And Pete Townshend said, "No, you're not closing the show. Who the hell are you?" And he said, "No, I'm going to close the show."
And he gave him a polite warning.
Exactly. And Pete Townsend said, "Well, you can't because you're not headlining act. We're headlining act." And Jimi Hendrix said, "If you don't let me close the show, if I have to open it up before you, you'll regret not letting me close the show." That was the time he set the guitar on fire, and he's praying over the guitar.
Wow.
And from that point on, when the Who came on, people left because they were like, "Well, what's after?" You know, that was back in the day when people would just leave your show.
Yeah.
They would just leave. They're like, "Man, here's Jimi Hendrix playing over the guitar. He's doing all kinds of cool stuff on the guitar. Sets it on fire, and then walks off stage." And then the Who had to go on after that.
Yeah, like, what do you do?
What do you do? You play the best you can to an audience of like half of the people that were there.
Right.
Well, now I think it's a great time to play one of Vermaelen's tunes. So this is Finish Line. Can you set this up?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so this was one of the songs that I did during quarantine. Something fun and different and new, very poppy and catchy. The intro is actually Gaga talking about what inspiration is and how it's so important to just be inspired and just let, you know, your art guide you through your artistic journey. So it's called Finish Line. It's a fun pop record, and I hope you enjoy.
All right, here we go.
It's hard to say why you believe in things. It's religious, really. It's faith. It's something so much greater than a color or a human being. It's your soul and passion. So I'm just very passionate about music and what I do. album doesn't make me an artist or not. What makes you an artist is your ideas and your convictions.
Woo!
Very nice, dude. Very nice. It sounds a little Anderson .Paak-ish. Are you familiar with Anderson?
No.
Listen to it. He's a multi-instrumentalist. He got signed by Dre. Dre didn't understand. When he first met Dre, Dre didn't know what he was talking about. And he said to Dre, let me in the studio. And I'll show you. And that's how it happened.
Please, that's what, I mean, that's why I feel like just let me just play. I'm terrible at explaining. Just, you know.
But it's good.
Yeah.
I hear more pop, R&B, neo soul. I don't really hear it as straight pop. I don't really. It's
yeah.
Pop. I'm sorry. Pop, R&B, hip hop, neo soul. That's what I
mean. I think how I describe the music, because this is just one of many, many different genres that I do, because I try to expand my creative taste buds as much as I can. But I always say that, you know, my artistry and my music is more of like vivid pop,
okay,
if that makes sense. So every time when I write something, I want you to see what I'm singing about to a certain degree, or you'll see it later during the show. So, but I appreciate that, you know,
absolutely,
genre sometimes, you know.
You actually need, that's funny, because you're, as you would call it, vivid pop, you can totally create your own genre. So you probably
yeah.
need a nice budget for music videos to really bring out
yeah.
the best for your music. So because we live in an age where everything's speaking to visual, that's where we're living
yeah.
now. Yeah. I know the days of the 70s, 80s, even the 80s were more, they became more visual, but now with
more than ever.
YouTube and everything else, it's really the thing at this point. It's so
well,
more than visual than anything else.
Right. I remember when I made the music video to this song, Finish Line,
okay.
And even my past music videos, you know, I want people to listen if you're my age or you're just coming up. If you really want something, you will figure it out as much as you can. I had an idea where I was just like, you know what? I'm gonna go on Amazon. I'm gonna buy myself a stabilizer, iPhone stabilizer.
Mm-hmm.
I already know how to work videos and everything, so on and so forth. I'm gonna have one of my good friends who's obsessed with filmmaking to hold my phone and just press record, and we're gonna figure this out together. And, you know, my creative team, the House of V, H-A-U-S, it's like my dream Mahalian factory. A lot of people come to me with different ideas, and it's all about a true, authentic collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is, in particular, the Finish Line video. You see me, well, there's two versions. There's like the fun, lighthearted one on Instagram, but then the real raw version in my YouTube one is where you see me wake up in tremendous, pain in a way, because I was suffering a lot from night terrors, or just awful ones, and I wanted to show that kind of vulnerability in the beginning of the song, to know that sure, I may have fun wigs and dress crazy, but I'm a real authentic breathing human being who goes through stuff.
So that's a real part of your life that you inserted in there.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Go ahead. If you get a chance, watch Miley Cyrus on Joe Rogan's podcast, and you'll
okay.
hear about how she talks about being human. And honestly, I never really cared for her music. After that podcast, I had so much respect for her.
Yeah.
She was just so talking about the things that got her down, why she hated the industry, yet she loved it, and she fell in love with the addiction of being popular.
Yeah.
And how she said it was a fine line with loving the addiction of being popular, or loving the celebrity status, then hating it at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's more of like, you know, people ask me all the time, do you want to be famous? Listen, my fame is internal. I'm not seeking external fame. It is internal. It is truly, I walk every day like I'm famous. But I'm also very sensible and a very kind, humble human being, still wanting to be the best and the greatest. And, you know, even one of the lyrics in the songs, I felt so hard than I ever did, wasn't sure if I was ever going to get up again. Now I see the bigger lessons. God is good, cannot help but glue the pieces. So I'm talking about trying to honor the struggle and the darkness, but also still feel humbled that, thank God, I'm able to feel this pain and understand what it truly is like to go through something. I mean, I'm a kid who unfortunately was brought up with parents with substance abuse issues, you know, verbal abuse and X, Y, and Z. And for me to put that in your bio. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
A boy has been through some things.
Don't get me mistaken,
but I am the person who chronically realized or psychologically realized that, you know, we have pathologies that we inherited from our family subconsciously. And for me, sure, it wasn't, you know, going out drinking and drugging and stuff like that, but I had a problem with, you know, trying to fix broken men who had substance abuse issues, if you know what I mean. So I've overcome that battle.
Let me know if I'm speaking out of turn. If you're used to having that in your family, and you being gay, I don't know, that's up to you to let me know.
Yeah.
Do you attract those types because you're used to seeing it in your house? And not the
beer. Oh, absolutely,
yes.
Okay. Yeah, like before I got quote unquote saved, I say pre-save a Milo, which was more of the type of person who would always attract, you know, rugged, wild men with substance abuse, like, you know, all of that. And I thought I was hot, luxurious, and attractive until I had a real awakening where I've had that encounter, and when the guy died like 7 days later. That just woke me up to really be like, okay, I'm good. I rebuke this. I will. And it was a problem for me. So, and I can now say I'm like,
that definitely
would change your perspective. Now, I'm going to ask you a question about staying creative during this time. Mm-hmm. And how you've been able to do that. But also, I want to add to the conversation, Harold Kimball, a tremendous saxophone player, all around great guy. We know him as the pie guy, and we'll get into that. But I want to say hello to our audience. we play music together, and me, him, and Anthony, we've all played music together. And so, let's get back to. I want you to tell the audience how during this time, during this COVID, during this whole time, you've been able to stay creative and productive. And then I'm going to ask Harold that same question, because Harold, you know, the thing about Harold is when you call him, you never know what state he's in. He is constantly traveling. You don't know if he's in Alabama or Florida or Arkansas or L.A.
Actual states. I thought you meant like in the state of mind. Like,
No, actual, that too. But in the actual states, you don't know where in the world is Harold. And so he's always traveling, but no matter where he is, he's also, you know, mentally, he's always such an inspirational person. And you'll hear that as we talk to him. But first, Silver Milo, tell us how you stay focused and grounded. And actually, we'll do a round robin. We'll go from Milo to Harold to you, Anthony, another super dynamic, energetic person like myself.
Okay. I really just take time to myself. So, how I stayed productive was through the faith of the feeling of like, okay, you're in a beautiful space where you live. You have all this land to like walk around, roam free, do walks, do climbing and stuff like that. But what is something that you can give a gift to the world? So that's when Tea With B started to come about. Me started to like, you know, okay, well, let me start getting organized. Let me print out my segments. Let me, you know, do X, Y, and Z, and A, B, and C. And I probably wrote a few songs here and there per se, but I was really focused on doing Tea With B, the talk show and everything, and like trying to be more skillful at that, because, you know, I'm very blessed with other attributes of creativity, so I wanted me to figure out more how I can be more productive in that realm. In February, I'm going to be taking a month off of the social media. Like, I delete the apps off my phone and I pick up a book and I like touch the world and nature and, you know, me being connected. So I know it's crazy. Like, you know, the Gen Z is like, there's no way I would disconnect my phone. But I'm telling you, being off your phone, off of social media, and just really connecting with yourself, that's what it made me for me to be more creative and just go for it, really go for it, you know.
Harold, now you travel around. This is Harold Kimball, everyone.
Hello, Harold Kimball. Hello again.
Hold on, now Harold, now you're muted. Hold on, unmute yourself. Now you may notice an uncanny vocal resemblance to James Earl Jones. That is his, but that is, this is Harold's natural voice. And Danina, Harold, can let me hear you.
Actually, I'm King Jaffe Dubo of the Moondash. Here in America, looking for my son Akeem.
Oh my God!
All my money, and now I can't get back home.
Oh my God!
We're getting ready to make Coming to America 3.
he could be like my intros for my next performances.
he's got amazing voiceover artist. I mean, so Harold, how do you stay grounded and in good spirits and, you know, able to move forward and actually be an inspiration to others, especially during this time?
Well, you know my motto is I never had so good. And I had my life over that for over 40 years now. I am known as the I never had a so good man around town. It has everything to do with Christ in my life, letting him be my lead and director, letting him be my sole go-to in the times of problems and trouble. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and delivered him out of all his troubles. That's me, and I've been in a lot of trouble, let me tell you. If you don't
Before we get into what kind of trouble Harold's been into.
Like being in good trouble. There's nothing like
that's
good
right.
Trouble. I will agree.
Well, all right, so another dynamic personality that's been, like myself, we actually have very paralleled kind of lives. He's a musician. He's also a television producer. Like myself, we've collaborated on a number of projects. How do you stay positive, especially during this last year?
The fact that I keep myself physically fit as much as I possibly can, good diet, good mental attitude. Meditation goes a long way. Meditation and prayer are kind of one and the same. So that, for me, is very big. Communication from bonds with my family is a big thing as well. Always maintaining that strong communication with family. And constantly staying creative under no matter what circumstance. Always staying creative. Like right now, I'm working on an app. I've been developing with a couple of my partners. Came out with a couple of base masks. I'm always creating something interesting. Like COVID, I found to be very much a sink or swim environment.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are sinking further and further in, and then there are those who are swimming and really getting above the water. And I feel that I could be one of those people. But I would say that's the general consensus for me. But mostly, mentally, keep myself mentally strong and keep myself physically strong. I find that either going to a gym or just going for walks and getting out and taking in the sun, because human beings are not designed to be locked into a place for a long period of time. You can't do this mandatory imprisonment in your own home. Eventually, you want to get out. I've known guys who would literally go out and buy cars. They didn't need a car. They just wanted to go out and spend money.
Right.
I need a car. You got a brand new car already. Nah, I want to get another one. Just buy it. So I need to get out of the house and do something with myself.
I like what Ravallo said about, you know, music and talent being actually a gift from God. And I see, and that I feel that way. And I know that you guys, you know, feel that way. And I know that, you know, and for me, you know, playing is, it's one part, a sort of release of energy and a focus way. It's another part sort of social evangelism. And we get out, and it gives you a chance to get out there and say and speak your truth. How are you guys sort of crafting that message? I know that Harold, you go out and you play a lot of different services. You as a sax player, now you know you you have a very interesting niche that you do. Will you tell our audience about that?
Well, I've been playing since I was in the sixth grade. I'm not a natural. All forcefully done. Started playing when I was in South Carolina and never wanted to give it up. Came to New York. And at 17 or 18, we started a group down in Brooklyn, New York. Started out initially as a district church organization, and over the years it morphed into a group called the Gospel Innovators. And at that time you had most of your gospel bands were heavy brass, trombones, tubas, and that stuff, most of them coming out of the Holy Houses of Prayer. And we ended up developing what some of my friends have called the first soft jazz gospel group. Our percussion was kungas, we had trumpet, saxophone, bass guitar, Fender Rhodes piano, and lead guitar. And with that group, I played along with the likes of Shirley Caesar, opened up for Jane Cleveland, Five Blind Boys, Swanee Quintet, various ones. I've accompanied the late Timothy Wright. I've accompanied Reverend Jameson, who's the head of the the International Mass Choir, James Cleveland Mass Choir. And I just love to play.
Yeah, you've been all over from the East Coast that I know. Now, Anthony, you, I know you play for a number of different groups. You've toured Europe. You have.
No, Europe,
no
Europe.
Well, not Europe, not yet. Maybe we get a chance to do it together. I said, Anthony has toured Europe, and played bass. In sort of pop rock sort of bands. Can you
pop rock, funk, metal, folk? They're like my genre that I ended up falling into the folk theme kind of by accident. My first tour was with Chubby Checker, actually. That was my first one. But I might have worked at Polygram Records.
That's going way back.
Well, no, funny. This was when he was doing not way back as in like way back, but this is more like 90s. Because he was playing corporate parties at the time. And so I played with the Polygram Records. I wasn't playing bass for a while. I was actually out of the military, and I kind of hung out. And I called my friend, just to check him up on him. And he goes, look, dude, you're wasting your talent. And he goes, you need to get back playing again. I said, okay, just find me a gig. And he kind of reaches out, and he turns around and goes, hey, does anyone need a bass player? And then I guess I heard a guy in the background go, well, Chubby does. His bass player broke his arm. So, all right, cool. So then I ended up starting off there. And then I ended up hooking up with Tracy Chapman for a little bit. And then Katie Lang and the band called The Belt. They were sort of Hollywood Records. They were like a punk. They were an all-black funk metal band. They were trying to be like the Living Colors of Bad Brains of the World, but they never could get to that point. But they had too much infighting. So I went to tour with them. Susan Vega. I did a stint with Katie Lang for a little bit. And then was invited to do a P-Funk gig. But the drugs were too much, and I don't live that lifestyle. And you know that band, that song Cantaloupe? They sampled a piece from Miles Davis. But that band, I went on tour with them for a little bit. And played around in the States and whatever else. I mean, that kind of was my shtick. But I didn't like, I found that I wasn't really a tour guy. I like writing and creating music in studios. And I like having a gym nearby, and you don't always have that when you're on tour. And then back then, there was a lot of guys. I found that musically, it's not who you know, it's who you get high with. And since I don't get high, I knew that my stint was going to last very long, because one guy from the band, The Justice System, said, I feel like whenever I go on the road with Anthony, I feel like my dad is in the room. I feel like there's a cop behind the door. Once I heard that, I kind of knew that my career was going to come to an end, because I was the guy that would go on tour. I would literally I wanted to see this city. So I didn't do the whole stay up late at night. If I stayed up late at night, I got up at 6 in the morning. I literally would get every one of them, I go, everyone get up. We're going to go out into the city. So I would drag these drunken high guys out. They're all pissed at me. But I didn't care. I'm in Italy. I want to see the city. What's the point in playing a gig, you get off late, the crew unpacks everything, you put it in the truck, they go out, they drink for the rest of the night, they go back to the hotel, they sleep for a few hours, or they sleep until 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you get up, and you get back on the tour bus, and you go to another city. I'm like, wait, you technically were in Naples, but you were here for like 20 minutes, technically, and then you left without seeing the city. I like to see them. Like, if I'm there, I want to meet the locals. So for me, the experience of playing with those people were cool, but the bigger experience for me was actually hanging out with like the locals, like in Germany. I would literally meet these Germans, and they'd say, hey, why don't you stay here? Let Tracy go, and you hang out with us. So I would hang out with the locals. I'm like, dude, I got to leave with them.
We are cut from the same cloth. One day when I get to be able to tour and everything, I'm totally like you. I don't drink or smoke or do anything that I'm like very in service of the art and the music, but I'm also the type of person to be like, let me go to the city where they're wanting us to come. And you know what I mean? It's just, why do I not want to meet the people who are excited to see me play? You know,
You're not with this. Randall has a problem with it. I play with a punk metal band out in Europe. I wore either a nun's outfit or a red pink and red polka dot dress. That was my stage gear. So now in Europe, you can get away with wearing that stuff because they see it as stage gear. But the funny thing about it is that Germans wanted to buy my dress, they wanted to buy my hat, they wanted to buy my nice outfit. Like, they're like, how much can we buy this off of you? I go, no, I wear this. No, but seriously, I'll give you 200 euros for it. And I'm like, no, I put $20 for it, but I need this for my stage getup. But I find that with the Europeans versus the Americans, if they like you, they want a piece of you before you leave.
Yes.
They want a piece of you. And they appreciate our music much more so than they did here in America.
That's a common thing that musicians report back. So, Romano, speaking of your tour, what do you want people to feel like? We started off the show talking about how people experience your show, and it's very dynamic, and you really give your all, and it's very theatrical, and it's very personal, and it's extremely sort of dynamic. What do you want people to take away? Now, we're nearing the 5 o'clock hour, so I'm going to take a station break at 5. We're going to come back from that station break with a bit of some of your music or whatever the first tune is from Grey Wisdom, and then we'll come back into the interview.
I'm going to send you a second link so you don't have to play the whole experience.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. But we got about a minute. Tell me before, and I'll play the first track of it. And then so tell me what you want the audience to feel when they see you perform.
Okay. I don't want, sure, it is great, but for me, I don't want you leaving my show loving me more. I want you leaving my show loving yourself more. Because I know who I am. I'm all about the self-love. It's great. If you love my work, that's fabulous. But when you're into my show, when you're in my whole, I call my show like a psychological autopsy of what is in my brain. Mm-hmm. And I, as the performer, want to be the host of an experience where everyone feels inclusive, everyone can dance free, everyone can have a beautiful experience. So, I just want them to leave connected with each other more than anything, because each space where I perform, hopefully with that kind of mindset, it will sprinkle some seeds for that kind of mentality to grow. And when they leave the show, they'll be like, oh my God, I met this kid, but I also met this cool person, and now we're friends, and you know, all of that. So I'm looking to spread love and awareness and friendship and family-oriented ways of thinking.
Well, great, and thank you. We're going to listen. We're going to come back with you. You're listening to WGXC, listener-supported radio for open ears. And we have on this great Tuesday afternoon, we have my musician buddy and good friend and dynamic bass player. We have Anthony Gethers. We have Vermilo. You guys can't see it, but he's playing air bass on the Zoom. And then we got Vermilo, dynamic performer, showstopper, self-proclaimed love child of Lady Gaga and Prince. And then we have spiritual, cool, motivated, dynamic sax player, Harold Kimball. And also, when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about also his cooking exploits. And you'll find out why they call him the pie guy. So we're going to talk about that. But set us up for, I'm going to play, you again, you sent me a link of an hour-long song, but I can play the first thing. Set up the first thing that we're going to hear. I'm going to play about 30, 40 seconds of it before we jump back into this conversation. And,
Okay.
Go ahead.
It is, you won't hear me sing, it is a beautiful intro of angelic instrumental string arrangement. So, yes.
Okay, so that sets us in the mood. And also remember, on our second hour, we're going to go to business. We have Jason Benitez, talent and diversity, vice president of talent diversity at the chamber, regional chamber in Albany. So we're going to get to the business side of that in this hour, but we're going to finish off with our music conversations with these great young men. This is, this project here, Finish Line, is what?
It is the single.
It's a single?
It's a standalone single, yeah.
Okay, that's an hour long.
Oh, this project, this new project?
Oh, no, Finish Line, I'm sorry, we played that earlier. I'm talking about Great Wisdom.
Great Wisdom is a soundtrack about a friend of mine.
Okay. Okay, so let's get into this atmospheric tune, and here it is.
Like an eagle in the sky.
Wow. That is quite a beautiful song. So when you say the various genres that you cover, you're not kidding.
Yeah, I listen when it helps me. I don't know. Well, to explain, do I have time to explain a little bit about it?
Yeah, go ahead.
So this particular project, Gray Wisdom, was actually for a friend of mine. I'm now in a space where I write less about me more because I still have to go through a few things in life, so like I have nothing else to write about. So I've been very inspired by soundtracks lately. So this person in particular, John is his name. He and I have kindred spirits, but yet he is 10 years older. And we're both like, it would be like we're both cut from the same cloth, except we're completely, you know, he's white, I'm black, I'm straight, I'm gay, he's straight. And we kind of really became close in so many ways. We both, you know, experienced substance abuse from our parents and our mother, you know, we both have mother issues and so on and so forth. And one of the best, amazing, kind things he's ever done for me, his girlfriend wanted him to go to this training program, a trauma training in Virginia. It's called the STAR program. It was actually meant for people who experienced 9/11, a terrorist attack, to kind of get through that trauma. But their formula worked out so well that they kind of tweaked it a little bit for every average folk to other traumatic experiences. So he invited me to go on this kind of this conference trauma training for a week that's really expensive, and he paid for everything, and he paid like everything, and he didn't let me pay for nothing. And I was really moved by that because I was so moved that he believed in me wanting to know my work and know my traumas and know my triggers and wanting to fix them instead of, you know, feel victimized by it. I want to learn more about it. And that just kept me so moved and so emotional that I wanted to pay it forward. And I wrote a whole soundtrack about his life up to the point where he met me. So it goes from him growing up in Ohio, him suffering, you know, him having relationship issues, self-discovery, what he wants to do in the world. And so it's a full project dedicated to him and about him. And, you know,
that's quite a gift. That's quite a gift to create a soundtrack, especially as atmospheric and as beautiful as that.
Can I ask you, can you do a breakdown of who played the instruments and how did the engineering work and everything else?
So the engineering works in so many different ways. So I have yet to find like my magical producer for the time being. Okay. I have a few, but all the music are from this website that I'm blanking on the name, but you can use it for copyrighted free music. So I cannot sell the instrumentation of it, but I can use it for creative purposes and so on and so forth. Except probably two or three, which are from certain films, but I loved it so much that I obviously like have it in the credits and in the where it came from and was it about. But I worked on it, like I knew I wanted to do it when I got home. I knew I was like, okay, I wanna emulate him, but I also wanna have a Bumilo twist to it, just a slither of it. And what it is sonic cinema. So I searched through hours and hours of music and instrumentals and what worked and what didn't, what felt, you know, what meant really good to the music and what didn't. So there's a list of people that I can't think of the names of right now, but I'll try to find them for you if you're interested. But
we're definitely gonna have you back. We are in hour two, and this is our business hour coming up, but you guys will be great. Vermala, will you come back?
Of course.
Okay.
As long as you'll have me back.
I'll definitely have you back. Your music. Your music.
A mile ago. No, I'm not coming back.
Exactly. That's it. You had your shot. Yeah. Yeah, that's. And we've got some more tunes. We've got some more tunes to play from you, Harold. We've just barely scratched the surface. I got your tunes. We've got some more. We've got some great things that me and Harold have done together, and things that he has done elsewhere. And so, Harold, also, will you come back in about 2 or 3 weeks? He's not saying no. He's just muted. Harold.
Exactly.
Show me the money. All right, Harold, unmute yourself.
All right.
There you go.
I got a 7-year-old, 11-year-old, and a 15-year-old, and it got real noisy.
Oh, okay. God bless you.
That would have helped in the beginning, but okay.
You gotta take it old school. You gotta do what my mom did. You pulled the belt.
Didn't I tell you? Anyway, no.
Exactly. I'm on the phone right now. I'm on a podcast right now.
That's right. I'm on the air. All right, so, okay. Harold, can I get you to come back?
Okay, yes.
Okay, we'll play some more of your tunes, and we'll dig into, what...
Can you come back now?
No, in a couple of weeks. That's it. The life of a great itinerant sax player who travels around the world bringing joy to... bringing joy to every community and to every venue that he plays in. And, of course, my steadfast partner in crime here, Crime and Music, Anthony Gethers. He'll be back. But, what we're going to do now, as promised, this is our business segment. And, I believe that in order for communities to be strong, that businesses must... Small businesses, especially, must take their place and thrive, especially black small businesses, because they build up black neighborhoods. And so we're going to pick up with that's it. So, we're going to pick up with a conversation that I had with Jason Benitez. And again, he is the vice president of talent and diversity from the Albany Regional Chamber. And we'll pick up the conversation, and I'll be back with these young people at some point in the future. So thank you, WGXC listeners. And now we're going to move into some business.
Young person.
Young person. Like myself. Hold on. Now let me just.
Young spirit. Young
She's getting rowdy. Even on Zoom, it gets rowdy. Okay. I'm muted, you guys.
Thank God for it.
Amen.
I beat you, Harold. I told you before, I'm 75.
You are not 75.
Well, I have an old soul of 30-something, so...
All right, guys, we will talk again. All right, we'll talk again soon. And thank you so much for coming by. This is my conversation with Jason Benitez.
Bye, everybody. You can't see us waving, but we're all waving.
Bye. Thank you so much. Love and appreciate all of you.
God bless. Hello, and once again, we're back to the WGXC Afternoon Radio Show. And as promised, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, in our new format, we have music and business. And on the business front, I am very pleased to introduce Jason Benitez. He's Vice President of Talent and Inclusion for the Capital Region Chamber. We met at a couple of chamber events, and this gentleman knows a lot about how to help minority women-owned businesses, as well as the functions that the chamber can do to assist them. Jason, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate you having me on, and it's a pleasure to be invited to your show today, so thank you.
It's a new year, and a lot of businesses have been experiencing a reorganization, because of COVID, because of communities being shut down, and a lot of businesses are unfortunately struggling with transitioning. especially minority businesses. What are your thoughts on what businesses can do and what the chamber might be able to do to help them and kind of different things out there to cope with this environment?
Yes, thank you for that. 2020 really uncovered a lot for us. I think it revealed some of the disparities that many of us knew existed for a long time. But, throughout the darkness of 2020, there were glimmers of light. And what I would say one of the glimmers of light was is that the events of not only the pandemic, but also the George Floyd murder and other murders this summer really elevated the conversation. Within organizations, I've noticed just a more robust conversation happening. I've noticed a conversation around matters of diversity, equity, inclusion happening at levels within organizations where it wasn't happening before. So I think this, 2020 offered a real awakening, so to speak, not only for some of our social issues, but as well as some of the economic disparities that exist. So I would like to think that, going into 2021, we're seeing a renewed commitment, a renewed vision on how we can really operate in a more equitable fashion. And when I say that, I think on an individual level and how we treat each other, on an organizational level, on how businesses and organizations are representing or are they including, or are they reflective of the communities they're serving, but also on a regional level, looking at, life outcomes, whether it's economics, education, healthcare, and how we can really bring some traction to the work that's being done to level those playing fields. So we at the Chamber, are very proud that we had already been working on diversity, equity, and inclusion before 2020, but again, 2020 really highlighted and illuminated the need for this continued work. So we have about 2,900 businesses in our membership, representing over 160,000 employees in our region, and that membership is diverse in many ways, and we're just continuing to look for ways to support that, to strengthen that, to look for best practices, whether it's hiring, whether it's helping businesses with immediate needs. So it was great to see that another round of PPP is going to be approved for businesses that are struggling. And we also have advocacy. So we have a VP of government relations that bouncing back from COVID as well as equity are the two main advocacy agenda items this year for the chamber. So you can kind of count on the Capital Region Chamber to be even increasingly involved in this work in not only helping our member businesses economically with immediate needs, but also kind of leading the way and leading the charge as far as best practices moving forward. So we have a number of services, specific to minority and women-owned businesses.
Now when we met at your office, one of the things that I loved about the services that you guys have offered, and your job in particular, is that when we talk about equity and diversity, you actually help businesses develop a policy of inclusion where they can actually start to look at their positions and how to really integrate those positions and seeing if they're really being reflective of their community. And I love the fact that that's a dedicated position in the chamber.
Yes, this position emerged, my position that I hold emerged from a need. We were hearing from our member businesses that they wanted more diversity within their applicants' pools. So it emerged, I would say, from a talent perspective of helping our businesses with more diverse talent. But as as we all know, and as 2020 continued to reveal, is you can't unmarry the economic and the social issues. So I think that while the position emerged more from a talent perspective, increasingly we're also looking at best practices as it relates to diversity, equity, and inclusion. So whether it's highlighting under-tapped segments of talent, whether that be immigrants, individuals with an incarceration record, folks with a disability, the LGBTQ community, that's one of the ways in which we assist businesses, is to maybe have them think about their talent engagement and outreach in a different way, maybe expose them to best practices in engaging an under-tapped talent pool that they haven't considered previously, but that are ready to go and ready to contribute in meaningful ways. So I think that those are some of the ways in which we assist companies in reimagining both the workforce and their talent pipeline, as well as the actual environment in their workplaces.
You know, a lot of businesses say, you know, they want to be diverse and more inclusive, but as you say, they try the same things. They try the same outreaches and the same methods, and then they end up saying, well, we tried and we can't be more diverse because no one's responding. And I like the fact that by showing businesses alternative ways that they can reach out intentionally and purposefully to build a more diverse workforce and talent pool, that they can in fact reach these, you know, populations that are underrepresented in their business.
Yes, you know, I think we can't let businesses get off the hook by just saying, well, those are the folks who applied and we're just not getting anybody from that X population to apply. Right. That means they're not looking hard enough, or they're not working hard enough, or they're not crafting their position descriptions and posting them on websites that will reach different audiences. So this is where we come in and help coach. You know, what are the journals that you're posting? Are you only posting on Indeed or you know, those websites? Or are you looking at more what we consider more niche kind of networks to post your job openings? You know, have you done some internal work reflectively to make your workplace more ready to receive different types of people? Because that's another big part of it. When we talk about, you know, youth in the workforce, you know, our younger population is really looking at organizations to have certain, you know, characteristics. And if they don't have that, then, you know, it's not going to align well. So I think part of it is kind of a rethinking and doing away with older, more traditional ways of recruiting and getting more creative. And a lot of this has to do with forging relationships, and sometimes that's the part that takes time. If a certain business or sector just hasn't had a strong relationship with a certain portion of our community, then maybe some effort needs to be put into do marketing, do some listening sessions, do some focus groups to really listen to that community and what their needs are, but also what they can bring to the table, and then try to utilize that knowledge to craft, whether it's marketing a position or, you know, another way to just track different talent to your organization. Those are some of the ways in which we work with and kind of coach different companies to think outside of the box.
So in your opinion and in your experience, when companies engage in these sort of different ways to do outreach, is that successful? Can they find employees that are more more representative of the community when they do these things?
You know, I think that results can vary on what actually happens. I think sometimes the technical skills that are needed in a certain sector might, you know, right off the bat kind of shorten the pool of available candidates. So I think it varies. But I would say that those companies that are committed to acknowledging that opportunities haven't been equitable, B, are willing to do the consistent work to try to better that situation, and then C, really just stay engaged and understand that the fruit may not yield right away, but that, you know, you as an organization just thinking about this issue differently and trying something different already is effort pointing in the right direction. So what I would say is that, yes, we have seen some success in companies that maybe, you know, didn't consider reaching out to a certain population or didn't consider advertising in a certain journal or area, and then they've done so and it's yielded a great, you know, hire for them. And that just then hopefully opens the door to you know, the more you diversify your network and your staff, then the more diverse of a network, larger, you know, a larger network that you can start to tap into. So I would say that again, I think that the actual results vary, but those companies that are willing and committed to continue to do this know that it's consistency and baby steps, and that it can lead to giant leaps. I think those are the companies that are going to be successful. So, you know, those companies that are less resistant to change, that are willing to do the work, and that are willing to take a real look in the mirror organizationally, are those that are going to fare better, you know, moving forward with advancing equity.
I totally agree. And I think that the companies that are proactive and have a diverse staff are going to be more competitive. They're going to be more easily able to integrate with the different population mixes that are emerging in society. And they're going to be more resilient as a company as a result of their diverse personnel that can take in different cultures and understand what's happening and not just have such a sort of myopic view about business and life and culture and community.
Absolutely, absolutely. There are numerous studies that show that more diverse teams impact the bottom line in a positive way.
Yeah.
When a company is facing a problem and solutions need to be generated, more diverse teams tend to bring different ideas and different perspectives and can brainstorm ideas in a more robust way. And as you mentioned, you know, visible representation matters, right? So people that are looking for a job and are looking to align themselves with a certain company may often go on that company's website and see what that website speaks to them and how it speaks to them. And does somebody that looks like them, is somebody that looks like them reflected on the website or part of the staff? And what companies need to understand is that matters. So, to your point, the more you bring in diverse folks, not only is it affecting your bottom line, but it's also positively impacting your ability to now resonate with different sectors of our community.
Absolutely. You know, if you walk into a business and you just see just sort of a monolithic culture, it has, an effect on the consumer. And if they can't see themselves represented within, you know, whether your sales force or your outbound tech force or whatever, then I think that it may, for many customers, be a negative.
Yes.
It create a negative impression.
Yes, absolutely. So the chamber is actually one initiative. The Community Foundation for the Greater Capital Region is leading this charge. It's called the Catalyst for Change Initiative, and essentially what it is you know, we, and the chamber is part of the steering committee, but essentially they did a study that showed that not-for-profits, even not-for-profits that are serving underrepresented communities, when you get to the board level of those organizations, it's still very male and still very white. So there's still very little diversity on the board. So this initiative is going to be an 8-week program where a cohort of diverse individuals have applied and have already been selected, and they're going to be trained for 8 weeks on how to serve on a board. And towards the end of that process, boards that are looking to diversify are going to be introduced, and there'll be a little bit of a matchmaking. So the idea is that, you know, we're giving these folks, diverse folks, the information and resources that are going to need to be successful board members, and then we're going to kind of, like, you know, send them out into these boards, you know, to serve on these boards.
The chamber itself has a lot of programs. We met, among other things, talking at MWBE conferences, and I went through the process. I was certified many years ago. I came back, I moved, I came back, I recertified. It took a little while, but it was a great thing to be a certified minority business enterprise. Can we talk about the two aspects of kind of how you guys get involved in helping people get certified, and also the other services that you offer to women and minority businesses?
Yes. So, you know, New York is one of the most regulated states to do business. So, it you know, putting aside the minority and women-owned business part of it, just to do business in general, New York is one of the most regulated states. So it's often said that it's a tough state to do business. So I think a part of that challenge, and particularly to the minority and women-owned, is navigating the process. There are tons of forms. There are all this data that you need to show. There, you know, and it can be daunting, particularly when you look at the fact that some of these minority and women-owned businesses are usually single, you know, very often a family-owned or single proprietor business. So it's, how do you, you know, get all your ducks in a row with the paperwork for the state, but also kind of get your business off the ground, and that can be a little bit much for folks. So that's where we come in. You know, we are a, let's see, I'm going to kind of take some, you know, we have a VP, Laura Mann, of business growth, and she's very much involved in this process. but she can help, and she has contacts, you know, on the legislative end. She has contacts at the state to understand this process of MWBE certification and helping our members navigate through that. So she can sit down and make sure that you're, give you direct service as far as like sitting down and making sure that your paperwork looks like it's on point, that she's aware of maybe some of the things that may have slow up the paperwork process and how to avoid that. So filling out, you know, the Capital Region Chamber can help guide through that process. For MWBEs, it must be 51% owned and controlled by the minority member or the woman. That's just a quick, at least a quick kind of stipulation. But, you know, we are on the business of really providing direct consultation at times. So Laura is a phenomenal resource. And then once you're in that kind of network, so to speak, you can kind of lean on the chamber for some of our other resources that are available to anyone. And that's, you know, Business U, that's like a series of professional development workshops for your business on different topics, ranging from marketing to leadership to finances and how to, you know, folks that may not know how to read a financial statement. So we have a number of resources not only to help you get certified, but also once you are certified and we walk you through that process to assist you in growing and then flourishing your business. So, you know, I
those are very good. I think Laura Land, or at least did a good portion of the workshop that I attended there.
Yes, yes.
Very informative. You have people from the state there. But I just think that the attention and detail to go through all of the sort of questions and preparations for certification, and it is voluminous, but it is worth it. And one of the things I realize is that, you know, a lot of the certification program comes out of the mindset of the construction technologies.
Yes.
Where I think that ownership, especially in the early days, was they really wanted to vet who owned the business, because, you know, it was hard to get the capital to be, you know, a minority construction company. And there were a lot of companies that did false fronts and pretended to serve in that way. So you guys, or the program itself, is very stringent upon, you know, proving what your owner, what the ownership ratios are.
Yes. So people,
once you do that, it's not, once you do that, it's not that laborious. I mean, you have to prove that you're an active business and do all the things that you would do as a business, but I would encourage every business to do that, because it's completely worth it.
Yes, and being certified and designated as a certified minority or women-owned business then bears with it a certain number of benefits. So, you know, you mentioned construction, and historically, yes, I think, you know, that was where the MWBE kind of push came from. But I you know, with construction, for example, I believe, I don't know the exact figures, but, you know, certain states, including New York, have stated that any new construction that's happening on the state level or for the state building, there's a requirement that the RFPs have to, you know, be from a certain number of minority or women-owned businesses. So it's kind of ensuring that when a company is looking to bid or bid out some services, that it's ensuring that minorities and women-owned businesses have a seat at that table to at least be considered. So that's one of the benefits, you know, but there are several others.
Yeah, so that's billions and billions of dollars.
Yes, we're not talking chump change, you know, when you think about, you know, some of the state contracts, like the SUNY campuses, those are all state buildings, and how much construction, you know, happens on those campuses on an annual basis, whether it's refurbishing or new construction. So, you know, it's really in the business owner's best interest, although seemingly a little bit, you know, intimidating, to push through that process and get certified. We would highly recommend it.
Yeah, and I think that you're a better business as a result of the process, because it makes you do certain things that you wouldn't necessarily do otherwise. And, you know, as a business owner, you might be great at your particular speciality of business, but to be successful in business, you have to be good at the business of doing business.
Correct.
And so this discipline kind of helps you to sort of dot your I's and cross your T's, so that you can really be competitive. And one of the things that came out of my training is that, you know, a lot of these companies, they're looking to give big contracts. And so as a minority business, you might think, you know, you're thinking maybe on a scale that's wholly and completely small as compared to the money that's truly out there.
Yes.
And so if you're, you know, once you get yourself together and get, you know, financing and things positioned so you can scale your business, there are literally, well, in the state there are billions, but in the capital region, certainly millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of opportunity dollars out there that are just waiting for companies to position themselves to take advantage of accessing these contracts.
Yes, and I think that that's to the very spirit of why MWBEs, you know, have been classified as a certain special business class, is that I think it was is a public kind of recognition and acknowledgement that some of these sectors have been so dominated by a certain group or, you know, a certain gender for so long that if left just to them to kind of, you know, open up the doors of inclusion to others, it's not going to happen. So the state kind of is saying that, you know, we need to do better in this space. We need to broaden opportunity. And we hope that those that are achieving the certification are beginning to see some of the benefits of that. And like you mentioned, there are, you know, even through COVID and through pandemic, there's still a lot of opportunity out there and a lot of dollars, frankly, to be had. So if we can help our businesses in a more equitable way be positioned to go after those contracts and those bids, then we just think it's a win-win, because it's helping our economy, but it's also making sure that opportunity is being expanded in an equitable way.
Absolutely. And, you know, I believe that, you know, successful Black businesses help strengthen and maintain neighborhoods. When you talk about equity and inclusion, these businesses hire minorities, the people who look themselves and others. They, you know, they shore up the retail space, you know, so you don't have, you know, urban blight where you just have, you know, businesses. And not to say that this has been controversial, but, you know, some businesses that move in to a neighborhood may look at it as in a predatory way, where businesses that represent that community are going to look at that their business and their functions very holistically.
Yes.
And they sponsor the teams, they buy ads, they, you know, there's the business, the dollars circulated become
Correct.
Much greater
kept,
and stay in the community longer.
Right. And I think that that's another big point, is that, you know, we hope that the MWBE also is like a little bit of a network within itself, is that you begin to know others that are going through the process, others that maybe have achieved the status. But you're right. I think that very often businesses from people of color or minority-owned businesses, there's a particular ethos to how they're going to operate. Mm-hmm. And that ethos usually, what I've seen, involves a understanding of the need of community, of giving back, of keeping the opportunity and the dollars within, and uplifting, you know, if they can, a whole neighborhood. So I think it's vital, you know, that we expand the MWB certification, expand the number of businesses that are operating in that space, and the chamber is ready to continue to be a resource to help that, because we think that business ownership, and then obviously, you know, the ability to hire is two of the ways in which we're going to achieve greater equity in a quicker way, is if we can help, you know, our local folks, you know, realize that dream that they've had of a business or opening a business and supporting them. So it's a win-win all around, you know, it's a win-win for the bottom line, but I think it also, as you said, it kind of enhances that sense of community, so to speak, in supporting each other. And, you know, you see a lot of like buy local, stay local, and I saw this year a lot of like buy from black owned, you know, so there's a community that begins to develop within that space.
You know, and sometimes I think the takeaway that I would hope that people get, our listening audience, is to A, support Black businesses, number one. You know, when you make a conscious decision when you're buying or sourcing products or services, to say, am I considering the full marketplace? And am I considering people that are in my community that can help me? And so that's number one. And then for entrepreneurs to take advantage of these services, get in business, And, you know, sometimes, I have to say, you might have to do a little, you know, a little bit more searching for black businesses. You know, we have a business directory that can help people, the Hudson Valley Black-Owned Business Directory can help people find businesses, but sometimes you have to kind of really look. But once you make that connection, then it's a great connection because, you know, I come from that. I'm a little older than you. You know, but we have a guy. You have a guy that does your car and a yes. guy that does your windows. And, you know, you need a guy, that, you know. And so you want that, you know, your list of resources, go-to resources, you want them to reflect your cultural, your own cultural sort of ambitions.
Yes,
in terms
absolutely.
Of, you know, who you're supporting. Look at who you're supporting.
I think our consumers in general, not just in the capital region, but in general, and I think this year highlighted it, but consumers are being more conscious of
yeah.
of where they're choosing to spend, how much they're choosing to spend, at which companies they're choosing to support. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think, you know,
no.
Raising awareness on a company's track record with the environment is one,
yep.
you know, on a company's track record with supporting diversity and inclusion, you know, those kinds of things. I worked in higher ed for many years before coming to the chamber, that particularly the younger generation, I mean, they're coming into the marketplace, coming into, you know, the age of adult consumerism, really with a keen eye for, like, who they're going to support, who they're not going to support, where they're going to put their money. And so I think our consumers are being very much more conscious, and we're even seeing that, you know, again, with the push to kind of buy local or stay local, you know, spend local, buy black, you know, to support those companies that kind of represent, again, going back to that term ethos, that represent the ethos that can align with yours.
Well, I'm gonna like you to come back at some point real soon.
Absolutely.
I mean, I knew this is probably gonna be a two-part interview, and I know that your time is short today. Do you have time to mention some of the programs that you want people to know about that your organization runs, and ways that they can get a hold of you and participate in those programs?
Absolutely. So we have a number of, whether they're business type councils, we have a number of events that we host every year. We have a number of initiatives that go on. So there's some work that's behind the scenes that folks don't see. So I, in particular, I kind of have a group called the Talent, Inclusive Talent Exchange Group, and it's a group of HR professionals with some diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioners, and they're there to kind of advance ideas and be a, you know, kind of cross-pollinate the ideas. And as we move forward with HR and talent development, how can we do that, you know, infusing a diversity kind of perspective? So we have councils that folks can get involved in. We have committees that you can get involved in. We have a Leadership Tech Valley program that's geared toward younger professionals and really exposing them to the all that the Capital Region has to offer, both from a business perspective, but also, you know, laying down roots and starting a life here. We host the Talent and Inclusion Summit annually in the fall, which is, again, really tries to promote best practices around diverse talent engagement. So that was in September, and it was very successful. I think there would be a lot to kind of rattle off today, but, you know, I think the best thing that I can do is say, you know, take a look at our website, capitalregionchamber.com. If you go to the staff page on that website, you know, it lists all of our staff members' direct contact information. So you're not going to hit necessarily a receptionist. You'll be able to get, you know, directly to that person. So if folks wanted to reach out to me about things that we're doing, you know, I was recently invited to be on a council for equitable vaccine rollout. So as the vaccine pivots rollout, how can we ensure that the rollout is being done in an equitable way? So I think not only are you going to see the chamber continue to advance, you know, economic and business related issues and initiatives, because that's obviously what's going to help our region prosper. But, you know, we're at this point where you can't ignore the social issues as well, because that has an impact. So, you know, so we host events, we have councils, we have, you know, annual events, we have one-off events, you know, if our one of our chamber members wants to create an idea for an event, we can do that. I think, you know, the digital format that we're in arguably allows, you know, things to happen a little bit quicker as far as organizing an event, because folks don't have to travel, or we don't have to worry about feeding. Right. You know, so I think that just staying engaged is a big part of it. You know, I think, you know, I'd ask folks who haven't taken a look at us at the chamber in a while to do so. You know, maybe not to kind of look at the chamber we were 5-10 years ago, but look at the chamber and who we are today and where we're pointed and the direction we're rowing in. And, you know, that includes a number of our services as well as, you know, what we're doing. So, you know, just today I was looking at our Business U, which is our kind of professional development for businesses, and mm-hmm. looking at the offerings there, and that's going to roll out soon. So that's a great way for our members to kind of look at. There's one on marketing. There's one on workplace wellness, you know, from a diversity perspective. So it's really just being a resource in any way we can to our member businesses in our region, to help them thrive economically first and foremost, but also, you know, thrive in every sense of the word. So, you know, I'm happy to come back for a part two and maybe, you know, think a little bit more specifically about programs that I can share. But, you know, I would say that we're in a partnership with the Capital Region BOCES and some of our school districts here, mm-hmm. which is trying to expose who works in the high school, and it gives them experiential opportunities. And it really, that's our pipe. We're working on the pipeline, so to speak, you know, getting a diverse mix of people in the pipeline early so that they're better prepared to take on positions when they're of age to do so. So this is a, you know, it's called a PTEC program, and it really, again, exposes our high school students to experiential hands-on experiences as far as STEM fields. And the great benefit is that these students work, by the time they graduate high school, they will have nearly achieved an associate's degree at SUNY Schenectady or Hudson Valley. So it's a partnership between the Chamber, Capital Region BOCES, and a couple of our local institutions of higher ed. So again, those are some great things that if folks didn't take the time to dig and really ask questions and know, they might not understand or realize that some of those things are going on, but we're here, we're working on it, and we you know, are aware that as we move forward and try to advance prosperity for our region, that we have to do so in a way that really brings everyone in our region along for that ride.
Well, and I thank you for the good work that you do. It's a short ride from Hudson. I'm in Hudson up there. I've been at the Chamber a number of times for your events. Many of your events are free. The ones that are not free, I think, are a low cost or free to Chamber members. So there's all sorts of ways to engage. And, you know, I thank you, Jason, and we will definitely have you back. Thank you for taking the time to talk to our audience, and thank you for the good work that you're doing.
My pleasure, sir. Good luck to you for the new year. Keep doing what you're doing, you know, getting more eyes and ears on these issues and the great work that you're doing with that business directory. And that's something that we'd be happy to share with members up here and put on our website. So keep up the great work, and I'd be happy to come back whenever you would like to have me.
Thank you, Jason. We'll give you a regular spot.
My pleasure.
Take care, my friend. I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Be well. Thank you.
That was our interview with Jason Benitez, and that was from the Capital Region Chamber. And we thank you, thank him for giving us all that great information on what the chamber can do as for regional businesses that are looking to expand. Hey, have with me not only a good friend, but a talented seamstress who has a business here in Hudson. Her name is Janice Beckles. She has a sewing business. She makes all sorts of custom clothing. And, you know, she's here to talk a little bit, not only about her business, but sort of doing business. She's not originally from Hudson, but she's been here a number of years, and she's been offering her services in many ways, and she's got a very unique take on what she wants to do and the way she wants to expand it. Janice, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you, Randall?
I am well. Now, I know that, you know, as your business, as well as many others, you know, have been turned around with COVID, you know, with the restrictions on meeting, with the restrictions on how people
do business. Has that affected you, and has it changed your strategy and point of view?
Yes, it has. But with COVID, it has kind of halted my going forward in my business as in manufacturing, because I want to eventually get into manufacturing. But with the COVID, it has halted and getting funding and whatnot. So I do work for individuals. I do work for myself, and I promote my clothing that I make. But what I eventually would like to do is start a manufacturing here in Hudson to employ youngsters or outside people to come that know about manufacturing clothing. I've gone to reach out to different manufacturers that I've come across, but I haven't gotten anywhere with them because they haven't gotten back to me, or they just, the volume of clothing that I want done, they're not able to do it.
Now,
either $2,000.
Right, and you have custom clothing that you want to do. Like, you have these very unique designs. Anybody who has seen you in Hudson immediately notices very unique custom clothing that is, you know, is dynamic, is well coordinated, and that's what you bring to the marketplace. But you had a vision to teach, like, young girls to sew and then, and integrate that into your manufacturing process.
Yes, that one of my main goals is to teach youngsters that don't particularly know that they have an art in fashion or would like to get into fashion, and to open up different avenues. There's many functions in fashion. It's not just designing clothes. It's making clothes. It's textiles. It's designing them, colors, things like that. And that's what I want to expand to teach some children that don't know that it's out there to have, that they can do themselves.
Now, one of the challenges here in Hudson is finding space. You know, a lot of companies
affordable
space. Yeah, exactly. Because we're in a community that has a lot of antique stores and sort of high end stores that really cater to tourism. It's tough for, let's say, to find affordable space for manufacturing where you can kind of set up a shop and sort of work out a startup a company.
Yes, because, and I think Hudson is the prime place to do it, because for one, there's many buildings here that are vacant that could accommodate the vision that I had. But with cost of rent being so astronomical, it's kind of hard to do it and also maintain my living. But I'm not giving up. I'm still searching. I'm reaching out there. And I'm looking for investors who would like to invest or donate a building, supplies and things of such.
Well, I definitely...
I have a plan.
Well, you're right. And I definitely feel like an incubator space is what's needed here so that, you know, small businesses or startup businesses can thrive. Anthony has a question.
Yes. Hi there, Jeff. My name is Anthony Gether.
Hi there.
That's good. Now, my question to you is this. I love what you're wearing right now. Did you make something like that? Is that made
yes.
by you? Okay.
Yes.
My question to you is, what inspired you to get involved in creating customized clothing?
My aunt, she used to sew, and she sewed for the likes of Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, Dinah Shore, and I would sit down and watch her do these things. And being of short stature, I would have to hem my pants and take them in. So I'm like, listen, I could do this. With the help of my aunt Itzebe, my dad buying me my first sewing machine, going to fashion industries and FIT, I found I loved it.
Okay.
I loved it.
So you're a graduate of FIT, like, when you mentioned earlier, like the earlier dinosaur types, are you looking for a modern day version of that as your target demographic when you think about that style?
Well, I do interpret that into many of my designs.
Okay.
but not. She also, you know, has made custom clothing for me and for artists. You know, and the other side, as we started the show about music, Janice also designs clothes for musicians specifically, kind of one-off custom clothing.
Okay, cool.
Now, who was the gentleman? Now, you've done clothing for me. I know you've done clothing for some of my other musician friends, including some over across the river. But you had mentioned the gentleman, and I forget what band he was in, but a prominent guy down in the city.
Roy Ayers.
Yeah, Roy Ayers. The famous Roy Ayers. That's right.
Roy Ayers, yes. I met Jackie for him. Mm-hmm. I went on how I saw him. I got his information, and I made a beautiful jacket for him, custom. The sleeves were a little too short, and he was on his way out, so I had to reconfigure the sleeves and whatnot. The jacket got to him, at least I think it did, and I left a coat down for Whoopi Goldberg, an outfit for Whoopi Goldberg. I have no idea if she got it or not. I reached out several times. You know how they want to. But, yeah. And I used to make costumes for Universal Soul Circus.
Wow. Well, so you bring all that experience up here when making clothes. Now, I know that Anthony, we spoke about earlier in this show how he had custom outfits as you dressed as a nun. While playing bass on stage in Germany.
I was there. I've been to Germany.
That's right. You
love Germany.
So you're available to make custom clothing. And actually, and it's funny because we were just talking about creative outlets, and in our off air conversations, Anthony also has a clothing line with masks, with shirts. He's got these great shirts that have musical symbols on them. So, you know, in addition to being a musician and a producer, you're also a creator. Can you tell us a little bit more about your shirts?
The shirts are more or less, they're all inspired by, I'm trying to do more positive affirmation in the world.
Okay.
Because there's so much crap going on that we need more of it. So one day, I felt the word love. I took the L and I made that into two bass guitars as the O. Then I used the O for a bass drum.
Yes.
I took the V for a flying V guitar, and the E I use as drumsticks.
Right. So, I understand very well where you're going, because right now I'm working on a design. I have a design, an invention, I guess.
Well, hey, before you get into that specific one, I don't want to leave the show without giving people both your contact information, because we're coming up on 1 minute. So quickly, where can people get a hold of you?
Okay, Anthony, I'm at 347-768-5092.
Okay, well that's your phone number. You know what? You can find them both on the Black Hudson Valley Black Owned Business directory, which is hvbod.com. So that's where you can find both of these guys. And it's a great resource, because if you don't have your own huge site, this gives you a preview to be able to see the works of local artisans, and especially the unique things that they have. I'm gonna close this show with Musical Genocide is just a great tune, and